Good morning, everybody. Great to see you today. And we've got a lot of special guests, a lot of things to celebrate today. I just want to let you know that there's only a few things that we freak out about at Gateway Church. One of them is church planting. We just get out of our minds excited. The other one is anything having to do with kids. And today is Fostering Connection Sunday, where we get to celebrate all of the resource families, all of those that are involved in foster care. Today we get to celebrate those. And so what I'm going to ask you today to do, just as a church, I'm just going to do a little video. And what I would love is, if you remember what we did when we started planting churches in Turkey, man, we just got crazy excited. And I think we at least deserve that kind of energy and excitement this morning. So we're just going to do a little video this morning. And I'm going to say, welcome to Connection Sunday. And I would love everybody to just cheer as loud as you can. Okay, you ready? Yay! Okay, all right. I like that. That's good. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Connection Sunday. Yeah. All right, I like it. Now, we're going to talk about a topic today that in so many ways defines the good news about Jesus, and this is something that we have as a church, we have to get this right. Let me just start off with a couple of statistics for us this morning. The first one is that in the United States alone, there's 443,000 kids in the foster care system. We zoom in a little bit, in California alone, there's 60,000 kids in the foster care system. And then just in LA County alone, there's 30,000 kids in the foster care system today. And when we hear stats like this, it can be, you know, it could be kind of overwhelming, like the crisis that we're experiencing is so huge. But what I want you to see this morning is that even though the crisis may be huge, the solution to this crisis is even bigger. Let me show you what I mean. In the United States, those that confess that they are Christians or followers of Jesus, there's over 220 million people that are Christians today. And if we're just going to do a little bit of math, that means for every child in the foster care system, there's 502 people that confess to be Christians. If we look at LA County alone, that means for every child in LA County, the need is massive. For every child in the foster care system, there's 143 people that say that they're followers of Jesus. If we look at the national stats, the average size of a church is 89 people. And what that tells us is that if just one person in every church and a half fostered one child, there would be no more need in the United States. Right? The crisis may be big, but the solution is so much bigger. And so here's the big idea this morning, is that the church is God's plan A to help children who are in need. If you're taking notes, the church is God's plan A to help children who are in need. I want to land on a passage of scripture that maybe some of you are familiar with already. It's James chapter 1, verse 27. And James is the brother of Jesus, and he defines for us, tells us what pure religion is. Now, if you remember a couple weeks ago, we talked about what would Jesus undo. He would undo religion because religion is just a steaming pile of poo. So there's just a thumbnail, just a soundbite for you if you missed that. But James clarifies this. He says this. He says, religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless, in other words, most religion, he doesn't, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. To look after orphans and widows in their distress. In that culture, in that society, it was Roman culture, widows and orphans were often the most vulnerable in that society. This was written 2,000 years ago, and typically what would happen is a woman would get married early. She would have kids, she would take care of the kids, she would take care of the house. The husband would work, would provide. And if a husband died, that would basically go her safety net. She would not be able to like put her kids in childcare and go get a job. It was kind of an agrarian society, kind of a farm kind of society where you've got your family and there's no welfare, there's no social services, nothing like that. And so if your husband died, you've really got no other options. And so what would happen is that the most despicable, the worst kind of men would come in. They would take advantage of women and children. Sometimes they would try to manipulate them, take advantage of them, sometimes try to take the children, put them into slavery, sell them into prostitution, sell them to the gladiator games. And so oftentimes the women and the children were the most vulnerable in the society if the man died. And so what James, the brother of Jesus, is saying in this text is that true religion is having the Father's heart for those that are the most vulnerable. And what's the Father's heart like? The Father's heart says, I've got to bring them in. The Father's heart says, I've got to protect them. I've got to take care of them. I've got to provide for them. If you remember the story from the Gospels, Jesus was at a location and parents were bringing the children to Jesus and the disciples were stopping them saying, hey, get out of here, get out of here. And you remember what Jesus says to the disciples? It's Mark chapter 10, verse 14, and this is what he says. Let's all read this out loud together. Ready? Let the children come to me. Now, just so you know, there's an exclamation point at the end of that. That kind of sounded like, let the children come to me. So let's try it like with the exclamation point. Ready? Let the children come to me. And see, this is what God the Father is like. Psalm 82, verse 3 through 4 gives us a picture of God's passion. And it says, defend the weak and the fatherless. Uphold the cause of the poor and the oppressed. Rescue the weak and the needy. Deliver them from the hand of the wicked. Notice the verb choices there. He says, defend them. Rescue them. You can't do that passively. You can't do that from the sidelines. These things are active. Defend them. Rescue them. The problem is that so oftentimes when we read stats or we hear stats like what we've talked about, or even when we read scripture, it's easy to ignore it until the stat becomes a person. In fact, this is so true, and I know some of you, your hearts are just so great. If I shared some stories with you and I put a picture of a real child up there with a real need, so many of you would say, sign me up. What can I do to help? I want to do something right now to help this child in need. Because when a stat has a story and we realize that it's a real person, something happens to our heart. In fact, I want to invite up a friend who on a day-to-day basis gets to interact not with statistics, but with these stories and with these faces. Would you help me welcome up Katie Rhodes?
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone. My name's Katie. I work for the County of Ventura with Children and Family Services with our Foster VC Kids Homes with Heart program. And I want to tell you one of the stories that actually made me take this job, because prior to working for the county, I worked for a lot of nonprofits. And I worked with children who had experienced abuse and neglect, some of whom had been trafficked and experienced homelessness and all sorts of things. But about 8 years ago, a very close friend of mine, one of my best friends, got a random call in the middle of the week, and it said, your cousin's baby, I get a little emotional about the story, your cousin's baby has been taken in to the child welfare system. Are you willing to provide a home for him while we figure out what's going to happen? My friend was in her 30s, she was single, she worked full time, and she didn't have the support of a faith community such as yours. And at the time, there weren't as many strong supports in our county as there are now. But she said yes, right? And she became what's known as a kinship family. So she takes in this, he was about 2 at the time, but he acted younger because his home was a home of neglect. He wasn't directly abused, but it was a home of addiction. So he was pretty low, like on his verbal skills. He actually didn't speak at 2. And he was pretty low on some of his like ability to manipulate things and to interact socially. So my friend had him for about 2 years. And I was kind of, maybe like a lot of you, I didn't know how to help. And I didn't really know what to do. I just would go over to my friend's house and hang out with her sometimes and watch her with this young man. And over the course of this 2 years, he totally changed. He learned to speak. He became one of the most vivacious toddlers that I've ever met. He was definitely more athletic than I am to this day. All of who he was created to be started shining in because of the love and the care that he received. Now, she was willing to adopt him, but my friend had actually signed up to help strengthen her family. She hadn't signed up to just rescue a kid. And a miracle of healing happened where the father was still in his addiction, but the mom went through several programs over the course of that 2 years, and the judge granted her back custody of this young man. And it was heartbreaking. I mean, I was heartbroken, and I thought, well, I'm never going to see him again. But what has changed with our system is that actually we want everyone to stay connected. So my friend has stayed connected with this. He's now 10 with this boy. She sends me pictures of him. And in fact, I was going to schedule something with her to hang out this week, and I went and looked. I have access to her calendar. And he's visiting her all this next week for summer vacation. And so this miracle happened in his life, but also in the family, where they were able to be strengthened together as a family. And that's what we're looking for. Even if you're not biologically related, if you're a community family, we have this opportunity to change people's lives just by being who we are. My friend, she'd never even been a parent before, but she just was who she was, and it changed his life and her life forever. It was the hardest and best thing she's ever done, and part of the reason I'm here today in front of you. Thank you. Yeah,
thank you, Katie. I think when we see the stats that we're talking about, it's easy to be overwhelmed, but the reality is that every single one of the 443,000 kids that are in foster care today, or 30,000 in LA County, every single one of them has a face and has a story and has a name. And I believe that God is calling us as his church to care about those who are in need. The scripture says to rescue the needy, to defend the weak, to care for the fatherless. And I think in our culture, and I'm certainly guilty of this, that it's so easy to kind of be like out of sight, out of mind. Like I've got my own problems. I've got my own bills to pay. I've got my own kids. I've got my own stuff going on. And it seems like rarely do I have the capacity to do any more than these things. But the truth is that our God cares so much about these kids, more than we could ever imagine. And the church exists for the very purpose of engaging God's passions. And so just as clearly as I can say it is that Jesus is calling us as his church to care about these kids as well. There's another great passage. Psalm chapter 68 tells us, it just gives a great picture of what God is like. It says, who is God? He's a father to the fatherless, defender of widows. This is God, whose dwelling is holy, and God places the lonely in families. See, the truth is that God sees today, he hears today children who are all around us. There's a kid who's been praying and asking God. There's a kid that's lonely. There's a 16-year-old that's asking for help. There's a 4-month-year-old that needs help. And what does God do? He looks for a family who's willing to say yes, and God orchestrates and brings the lonely into families. Why? So they can experience the health, they can experience love, they can experience compassion and care, and in many ways experience the love of Jesus for the first time and be with somebody with a family that absolutely cares about them. What does God do? God picks up the lonely and he puts them into family. Now here's the question. What if God has his eye on your family? What if God is thinking about your home? What if for some of you, you could become the answer to a child's deepest prayer, where there's a child today or last night that's saying, God, would you please give me a family? God, would you please give me somebody to love me? God, would you please give me a place to belong? What if some of you were to become the answer to that prayer? Now, a lot of you may hear this and almost it's almost uncomfortable for you because you've got so much going on in life. You're like, I don't want to do this, or I don't know how to do this, or, you know, I'm not called to foster or adopt, or, you know, I can't have a child in my home right now. And that may be true. For some of you, do not have a child in your home. Like, you just work on you right now. Let's just be honest. And so for some of us, we can just relax, okay? Asking the question, should I have a child or a teen in my home right now, that may not be the right question for you, but let me give you a question that every single one of us could ask. This is a question we can all ask is, God, what would you have me do to be involved? God, you know my capacity. You know what I'm capable of and what I'm not capable of. God, what would you have me do to be involved? Instead of just saying no to this, pray and ask God, is there something, God, that you would have me do? Because there is a place for you. In fact, I'm excited about this because I get to welcome up the party, Deanna and maybe Tony, and we get to hear from them their story, how they got involved.
Thanks for being the party today. My name's Deanna. This is my husband, Tony, the quiet one. I tend to get emotional about this, so I wrote it all down, so forgive me for staring at my paper. Justin asked me to share our story with y'all this morning. We've been married for 6 years and have been foster parents now for 3 years. Our story of entering foster care isn't the same as many folks, but that's okay. Everyone's journey is different. First off, I've always had a heart for adoption since I was young, to the point that when Tony and I started dating, that was one of the first subjects I brought up. So how do you feel about adoption? And he was like a little hesitant, like, how about we just have our own first? No, okay, sure. So God had planted the seed for us back then. Tony and I tried years naturally to have a family, fertility treatments, shots, the whole works. That didn't work. So soon after that, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And so any option of biological children kind of went out the window for us. But that was okay, because God had already tapped my shoulder, right? So in my searching for adoption, I stumbled upon an informational meeting about foster care. And after much discussion, we decided to go. What could it hurt, right? Just information. So my desire to be a mama had been paramount all of my life. We didn't have to pay for training for this. We just had to show up. All we had to do was go to the classes. We went to the classes, which took just a matter of weeks. We had folks come to our home, check it out, make sure it was safe, make sure we were safe, and we passed, yay. We live in Ventura County, so our license is through Ventura County. And we obtained our license in June of 2016, and that's when we got our first placement. Since that date, we have had 6 children now come through our home. We have 2 little girls right now that we're blessed with, and every other weekend we have, kind of like Katie mentioned, we have our placement that we used to have that spends the weekend with us every other weekend, and I'm sure you guys have probably seen her with us. This is the hardest thing that we've ever done, for me especially, to not be able to have children and to have children temporarily. Sometimes it's heartbreaking, but you know, God's got a purpose for this journey, and he's stretching us, and he's teaching us, and this is the way God has allowed us to be parents. And so God answered the desires of my heart, and I get to have babies in my arms. So hopefully he'll tug on your hearts too, and maybe you'll have a 16-year-old in your arms soon. Thank you. Thank you.
Can we give it up for Tony and Deanna? Hey, just want to say we appreciate you guys so much. Yeah, we so much. That is such a great picture of how God uses his plan A, the church, to make a difference in the life of some children. When you think about it, if you ever let a child into your home, if you ever say yes to this, you may never be more like God than in that moment. Think about it. You may never be more like God. That could be the most God-like thing that many of us ever do when we invite a child into our home. Why? Because if you're a follower of Jesus, that's exactly what God does for us. Listen to how Paul says this in Ephesians 1:5. He said, God decided in advance to adopt us into his own family by bringing us to himself through Jesus Christ. This is what he wanted to do, and it gave him what? What's the last two words? It gave him great pleasure. It wasn't drudgery. It wasn't like, oh, if I have to. This is what he wanted to. This gave him great pleasure. And as we talk about this, I promise you, I don't want to guilt anybody into this, never, ever at all. But what I do want to do is help us as the church to recognize that we are God's plan A for meeting this need. And if the Holy Spirit speaks to us and nudges us and just gives us a little hint, and let me just say, for those of us that are the most resistant, like, no way, no way, God's like, yes, it's you, it's you. For those of us that God is nudging, what do? Let me just give us a couple next steps. What can we do? The first thing you can do is you can pray, just like we already said. God, what would you have me do to be involved? You could be single, you could be married, you could be an empty nester, doesn't matter. What can you do to be involved? Second thing you can do is you can be extended family. At Gateway, we care about all life, all kids, and the truth is that all of life doesn't just need a family. All of life needs a spiritual family. And as such, they need the church. And so as more and more families at Gateway adopt and do foster care, what you can do is help show these kids the love of God on Sundays. You can get down on their levels. You can be excited about them. You can learn their names and what they love to do. You can fight over who gets to hold them. All these different things. It doesn't have to be a big thing. You can give a hug. Listen, it doesn't have to be huge. It could be something that small. What else can you do? You can serve in Motion Kids. You can be a hero maker over there with the kids. Let me just say, gentlemen, man, we got to step up. Because one of the greatest things that you can do as a man is to be a positive male godly influence in the life of a child. And so you can serve them and you can invest in these kids and help them to experience what God is like through your example. You can make a difference in that way. What else can you do? And you can throw a baby shower for a family that's adopting. You can help a caseworker that's overloaded and underpaid. You can provide for the needs of those that are going through something, going through a difficulty. You can be a respite caregiver where maybe you're not the primary family, but you help out that family if they need a date night or they need a couple days away. You can help out. You can do any number of things. Now, here's the truth if you're taking notes, is that you cannot do everything. But every single one of us can do something. You can't do everything, but we can all do something. And I want you to think with me for a second. I was having a conversation with a friend the other day that you know, really hates organized religion. And I said, me too. And I'm just teasing. But she said, why are you a pastor? And I thought about it is because when the church organizes together, there is nothing more powerful on the face of this, nothing that could revolutionize things when the church actually acts like the church. And if we dream for a second, just think about this. If every church, one person in every church and a half adopted a child or did foster care, there would be no more need for kids needing a home. But listen to this. If every follower of Jesus said yes to something, where you're serving kids, or you're a hero maker at Motion, or you supported a single mom or dad, or you loved on and supported a teenager that got pregnant out of wedlock that would usually feel rejected by the church. If every follower of Jesus did something, here's what would happen. Instead of in our county there being 30,000 kids needing a home, there would be families waiting for children to be in need. That's what would happen. Why? Because the church rose up and lived as the church. See, the church is God's plan A, and I believe that what-if scenario, that dream, could be a reality if we as God's church would simply pray. And when He leads us, we say yes. Even though it may be the most difficult thing we ever do, that child is worth it. You, the church, are God's plan A, and God calls every single one of us to care. Now, here's a promise. The last thing where you can take notes if you're taking notes is that if you make a difference in the life of a child, you may not change the world, but you will change his or her world. Let me say that one more time. If you make a difference in the life of a child, you may not change the world, but you will change his or her world. I want to invite all of us this morning to bow our heads and pray.